both Obama and Clinton are working to reassure blue-collar voters that they'll put a stop to job outsourcing and rethink free trade. President Bush, meantime, is keeping trade in the headlines. He's pushing the Congress to ratify a new free trade agreement with Colombia. But Democrats have stuck it on the back burner to the dismay of the president.
This free trade agreement is in our national interest. Yet that bill is dead unless the speaker schedules a definite vote. This is an unprecedented move.
Or maybe it's just politics as usual. In any case, there's no doubt that free trade is a divisive issue right now. Daniel Dresner is a political scientist at Tufts who's been writing about free trade and the proposed Colombia Pact, and he joins us now. Hi, Dan.
Hello, and happy birthday.
Thank you. How did you know? Okay, let's talk about this Colombia deal. Now, it would benefit the U.S. economy by something like 0.0005%, and yet the president
That actually might be generous.
Really? Is that right?
Well, I think it might be 0.0005, or there might be another zero.
Holy smokes. Our president is fighting Congress over it, and Hillary's chief strategist, Mark Penn, lost his job over it. So why, Dan? What's the big deal?
Well, the problem isn't the economics. The problem is the politics.
Okay.
The current status of two-way trade with Colombia is that we basically allow almost all goods in from Colombia, imported from Colombia, duty-free. So an FTA with Colombia doesn't change Colombian access to our markets. On the other hand, the FTA would change our access to Colombian markets. Colombia actually has to reduce a fair number of its tariffs and agree to a number of other provisions on things like intellectual property rights, which would presumably benefit U.S. exporters. So the U.S. would benefit from the deal. It would be a microscopic benefit, but it is a benefit. That's not the problem, though. The problem is that trade is obviously, as you pointed out, a politically toxic issue on the campaign trail right now. And the other thing is that this trade deal isn't so much about trade. It's about security. It's about reassuring Colombia that we will be a vital partner for them going forward.
Do you agree with the president that the agreement is in our national interest?
Yes, I do. If I had to in a perfectly just world, Congress would deal with this by a voice vote because it's so unimportant for the United States economy and we'd be done with it. But you know, Colombia borders Venezuela. Hugo Chavez is the president of Venezuela. He's not a particularly big fan of either Colombia or the United States. There are ties between Hugo Chavez and FARC, which is the Colombian rebel group that's been fighting an endless war against the Colombian government. This trade agreement would surely be one of those ways in which we would send a signal saying we're going to stand by our allies. And furthermore, the Colombian government, to its credit, has actually engaged in a number of efforts to try to placate both members of Congress and the Bush administration on issues like, let's say, violence against labor officials, which is not an insignificant fact.
Mm-hmm.
But since Juan Uribe, who is now the president of Colombia, took power in 2003, the number of killings of labor officials has gone down dramatically and the number of prosecutions has gone up. It's hardly a perfect situation. But the question you want to ask yourself is what's going to improve that situation? Rejecting Colombia after they've spent 5 years trying to improve things or actually accepting the agreement and hoping that they grow their way out of these problems?
I just want to make sure everyone knows what we're talking about. There have been a large number of assassinations of union organizers, right? That's what you're referring
to. Yes. There's been a lot of violence in Colombia in general.
Okay.
The country has been racked by civil war. One group is FARC, which is sort of a leftist guerrilla group, but they're actually now also known as narco traffickers. Then there were paramilitary groups on the right. They've ostensibly been disbanded, although there's questions about whether or not there's still sort of a shadowy presence. The point is there's been a lot of violence in Colombia, but it should also be pointed out that the violence was a lot worse 10 years ago, that actually if you take a look at the trend line, particularly since 2003, you've seen things improving rather significantly. We would hope that Iraq would be improving at that level.
Now, Senators Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are both opposing this deal with Colombia on human rights grounds, pointing to these assassinations of union organizers. Do you think that's a compelling argument that's working for them?
It's a compelling argument for them on the campaign trail because they're trying to please union officials and union workers in places like Ohio and Pennsylvania. And sounding tough on trade, you know, is presumably one way in which you, you know, placate those groups. The interesting thing is if you actually take a look at public opinion polls, particularly of union workers, they kind of know this is almost all kabuki theater, that they're going to talk tough about this, but once they become president might actually wind up pursuing even, you know, more free trade agreements.
How much of this is pandering?
About 99% of it, 0.9. I mean, to be clear, the issue of the labor officials being targeted for assassination in Colombia is serious. I don't mean to minimize that completely. Again, though, if you want to look at what the direction has been, the direction has been a positive one. And you can argue that presumably an FTA, among other things, exports, you know, improves the rule of law in Colombia, which would hopefully lead to fewer extralegal killings.
How much does free trade really hurt low-wage earners in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio? Talk to me about outsourcing.
Outsourcing is an issue. I mean, economists, when they talk about this, there's not a complete consensus on this issue. The general consensus is that, you know, about 10 to 15% of, let's say, rising inequality or stagnant wages in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio, is free trade is responsible for that. But it should also be pointed out that free trade with Colombia would have zero effect on these sorts of groups. That in fact, the country that is responsible for all you know, for a lot of this, whatever trade's contributing effect is to this, is China. That was why it was very odd when NAFTA became a sort of hot button issue in Ohio a few weeks ago, because NAFTA generally is agreed upon had almost zero effect on Ohio's manufacturing base. And similarly, the FTA with Colombia would have zero effect on Pennsylvania's workers.
So let's talk about the sort of procedural jujitsu that Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi used last week to shut down the vote on the deal. Why did she do that?
Well, the free trade agreement with Colombia was negotiated under what was called Trade Promotion Authority, which is now expired, but it was sort of grandfathered in for the FTA with Colombia. The premise being that the president can negotiate a free trade agreement with another country, or a preferential trade agreement with another country, and then submit it to Congress. Both houses of Congress have to approve majority, and it's only an up or down vote. It can't be amended. Now, this has been the traditional procedure for quite some time in terms of passing trade agreements, in part because Congress wants to prevent itself from doing things like amending agreements to death, because if they were given the power to amend, there would never be an agreement that would pass Congress. On the other hand, these agreements are subject to the rules of Congress, and so the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, was able to basically sequester the bill by using House rules, which are basically under her prerogative.
So when you're saying that you agree with the president that the agreement is in our national interest, how much of your support of it do you attribute to the fact that, as you were describing it to us, this could be good for security in South America?
Again, a fair amount of it. The economic effects are not terribly huge, as we've said. I mean, the chief benefit of the free trade agreement from an economic perspective is that it locks in what is the status quo in terms of our access, or allowing Colombian access to U.S. Markets, which is presumably a good thing. We get cheaper imports. And also, it by Colombia changing its rules and allowing preferential access for U.S. exporters, it locks in those reforms as well. Hopefully, also, if you want to see fewer labor and union organizers killed in Colombia, this presumably locks in the reform path that the Uribe government has pursued and hopefully, you know, continues that trajectory. And one would argue that the FTA could contribute to that.
How do you think we should modify our free trade agreements, Dan? I mean, what are some of the problems with free trade as we've been practicing it?
I think one of the obvious problems is that there's a perception by a large swath of the country that they don't benefit from free trade agreements, that all it does is increase worker uncertainty. There is a program that has expired called Trade Adjustment Assistance, which in theory is supposed to allow for protections for workers who lose their jobs directly or indirectly because of trade liberalization. So that would certainly be one way in which, if you allowed for TAA, it would allow workers to feel somewhat more secure that if they were somewhat negatively affected by the trade agreement, they would have a safety net to fall back on. Even more generally, you know, you can argue that the primary concern that workers have with regard to trade, interestingly enough, is not losing their job. It's losing their health care benefits.
Hmm.
And so there is a link, one could argue, between reforming health care, making it more portable in one way or another for workers, and making them more sanguine about trade liberalization.
Dan, how much do you think it hurt Hillary's campaign with her political Svengali Mark Penn, you know, meeting with Colombian officials, even if she did, you know, ultimately fire him?
Yeah. I mean, I think it certainly hurt her a little bit. On the other hand, I think it's been eclipsed by the Obama,
bitter
bitterness, Bittergate, or whatever you want to call it.
I haven't heard that yet.
Oh, a Bittergate? Yeah. Well, okay, I get copyright credit on that.
Okay,
then.
That's good.
But, yeah, I mean, I think it's been a little bit eclipsed by that. There's no question, though, it hurt her because it, again, sort of suggested this duality with regard to the Clintons, that on the one hand, Hillary is sort of making this populist appeal now on trade, but, you know, it sort of elides the fact that the Clinton administration was relatively enthusiastic about free trade agreements and that even Hillary Clinton, when she was in the Clinton administration, was a booster of these agreements.
And to be fair, how soon they forget. I mean, this was practically a rerun of what happened to Obama a few months back when one of his top advisors met with Canadian officials, you know, to reassure them that his anti-NAFTA rhetoric was just posturing.
Yes, and it should be pointed out that even at that point that Clinton officials were basically saying the same thing to Canadian officials sotto voce about NAFTA. I mean, which again is why workers aren't stupid about this. That's why in polling they generally think this is all kabuki theater.
Finally, Dan, I understand you've been into global politics for quite a while, that you wrote your first newspaper op-ed about the Reagan Doctrine at age 17?
Oh, dear God, the secret is out. yes, this is true. I did. I was a high school student. It's actually a fun story. I wrote the essay and I sent it in. I didn't inform the Hartford Courant of my age. And so when they contacted my mother about this, they asked to speak to her husband. And then they, you know, found out that it was her son that wrote it. And to their credit, they still published it.
Oh, Dan, please tell me it helped you get a really cute prom date.
No, I was such a geek. I mean, think about it. Anyone who writes an op-ed at the age of 17 on the Reagan Doctrine is a little bit too geeky to get a cool prom date, I'm afraid.
But you guys make up for it years later.
Yes. No. The best revenge is living well. And so, yeah, it's worked out pretty well for me.
Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Daniel Dresner is a professor of international politics at Tufts University. For more about him, please visit our website, morefairgame.org.